Phil Calvisi just walked into the Ogden Community Studios. Rudy Carpenter is filling in for Wolf, and the former ASU quarterback is flying out to the combine in Indianapolis. And the number one question that needs to be asked is, when are we going to steal the combine? It's just ridiculous. Okay, I realize everybody says, oh, it's so convenient in Indianapolis because you got this, you got this, you got this, and everything's right there in the centralized location. They forget one thing when they say that, Rudy. It's just still Indianapolis.
You see, you hear Jim Irsay got all defensive because there's a lot of questions, a lot of pointed questions like, well, wait a minute, other owners want this
yes.
in their markets. And Jim Irsay got all protective and said, you know what, we've established a tradition.
No.
And he cited competitive advantages like MRIs. He said they turn around the medical end better than anyone. That's what he said.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you, Kay. I got a chance to perform in the combine, and I get a chance to go every year outside of that. I just think that, look, having the NFL combine in a place like Arizona would be great, obviously. I mean, you're talking about all of the NFL teams in Old Town Scottsdale or downtown, or the Biltmore. It'd be great. I mean, look, I think it'd be great. But I also know a lot of the people in the NFL, and Indianapolis is a much better place for them and their personal lives to be in Indianapolis than Miami or in Los Angeles or in Scottsdale.
I don't think anyone's ever said the phrase, what happens in Indianapolis stays in Indianapolis, but obviously it's easier to hold things down and less temptations
in
Indianapolis.
I really think people might think I'm crazy, but I really think that Las Vegas is going
I do think
to
it's
be
going to Vegas
a massive,
point.
Massive sports boom in Las Vegas. I think
the combine will be there.
Is there for it. A lot of people want to be there. I just think that we're going to start seeing a ton of events in Las Vegas.
The question that Maloney has written up, that this question drives me nuts, and I think Paul likes it, so Paul and I can go at it. And that is, should the Cardinals focus on offense on the draft? And the theory being, if you have a crappy quarterback that just got lucky in 1 year, it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to find out, and then Kyler falls on his face, and that's it. But if Kyler is as special as some people think, then why not double down? Just have a defense that gets by. Maybe lets you have a ton of yards, but is always going for the turnover. Do whatever you can to get the ball back in Kyler's hands and give Kyler the weapons because you found the quarterback. And the reason why this question drives me crazy is when you have a draft – who's the best player? You have all this money to spend on scouting. You watch all of this film. You can watch college football games and say, he's good, he's average, he's great. And then you throw all that away and say, but I've got to draft a guy that does this for Kyler. No, just draft the best player because look at the Cardinals. 3 wins and you did so much better you got to 5. This team is so bad. Why are we discussing whether or not you need to get somebody for Kyler Murray? Just get a guy that's better than the guy behind him in the draft. That's what you need to do, because no matter what hole we're talking about, the Cardinals need you.
Look, I have a really bad take, and it's terrible to have a bad take when you're on sports radio for 4 hours. You have to give opinions. I don't think it matters what the Arizona Cardinals do in the draft this year. It doesn't matter, in my view. It's not going to make a difference.
Why do you say that?
It's not going to make a difference. Tell me a guy on this team is going to make it. Tell me a guy at
Derek
the top
Brown.
10 is going to make it. What's he going to do?
He's going to be better than everybody else they have on the defensive line other than Chandler Jones.
So you think that Derek Brown's going to come in and instantly be an impact player on that defensive line?
I think Derek Brown's going to instantly be an impact player on that defensive line.
Okay, what if they get a dynamic X? What if they get that outside receiver that this offense sorely needed by the end of last year? That was a dire need. There were teams game planning against them, and it was really hurting them, the fact they didn't have that outside threat.
Who are you going to get rid of? Which guys are you going to get rid of? All the guys that they drafted last year who didn't do anything?
Maybe.
They still got Danny Isabella on their team. They still got Hakeem Butler on their team.
Guess
what,
though,
Rudy? They still got Keyshawn Johnson on their team. They're still pretending like undrafted free agents could play.
They already did that. The last month of the year, how much did Keyshawn Johnson play? How much did Danny Isabella play? Hakeem Butler missed the entire year. Those three rookie draft picks really weren't a factor, especially in December.
And all of those same evaluators are still evaluating the guys. That's all I'm saying. And I like Steve Keim, and I like the entire scouting department and organization. But what I'm saying is, what's really, really, really difficult about the draft, especially, is you don't know how guys are wired. That's the biggest thing.
But back
thing
to
in
your original point,
guys are wired.
If they do get that dynamic guy at number eight, whether it's Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, if he is the guy,
can you protect
that's, that's going to make a difference, Rudy.
Can you protect it, especially in this division when you have the Los Angeles Rams, you have the 49ers, and you have the Seahawks? Can you protect it? I don't know. Well, I don't know. And I will say this.
After the 20 sack first month, they did a pretty good job of protecting Kyler Murray.
And I knew that was going to be your answer, and I agree. And I agree. They did a better job. The offensive line for the Arizona Cardinals was not as bad as people like me or others made it seem all year. I will agree to that. But I still don't think that this is an offensive line that's going to win you more than five or six games.
So you're still answering. You're not saying go offense just because you have Kyler. You're saying you think this offensive line needs help.
What I'm saying is there's a lot of things that play here. There's a lot of things that play. And this is one of the things that affects all of the organizations, in my view. And it's one of the reasons why teams like the Patriots or even now the Kansas City Chiefs are playing well. When you look at the Arizona Cardinals, you have a guy like Steve Keim who's been a successful GM who is now trying to save his job. Mm-hmm. But you also have a brand new coach in Cliff Kingsbury who's trying to save his job and create a career in the NFL. You have a scouting department with a bunch of guys in that department who are trying to ascend and climb.
Right.
Everybody has different agendas. To me, if I'm Steve Keim and if I'm Michael Bidwell, I say, we hired Cliff Kingsbury for a reason. Let's go all in on Cliff Kingsbury, not all in on Kyler Murray. Whatever Cliff Kingsbury and his staff thinks they need to make this team the best team, let's do that. Maybe not a specific player, but positions, or maybe specific players. That's just my view. I think it's very hard.
The fact you have Kyler Murray, doesn't it enable and allow you to do exactly that? Now that you have the future franchise quarterback for the next decade, now you truly can take that best player that's going to serve and fill some. And they have multiple needs, there's no doubt about it. So the guy that falls to them at eight, the guy that falls to them at the top of the second round, odds are they're going to have a dire need for that guy in that position.
Let's say they win seven games this year and the first round pick this year is terrible. What happens to Steve Keim?
Nothing. I don't think anything changes because then if they're winning. Or do you mean seven games total?
Seven games total. They win seven games total this year and don't go to the
playoffs. I bet Michael Bidwell would say we've improved and he's okay with that.
All right.
I look at it and say with this draft, if you are standing on the table as a well-renowned scout who is successful and you are saying Tristan Wirfs is better than Derek Brown, if you are saying Jerry Jeudy is that much better than Javon Kinlaw.
If I'm a damaged GM, I like guys who don't have stats.
And I'm okay. I'm okay with that if you're positive about it. What I can't stand is the idea if somebody says, I know Javon Kinlaw will be a better player than Jerry Jeudy, but because we have Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, draft Jerry Jeudy. No. Who is the best player? Draft that guy. Because guess what you need? That team needs better players.
Okay, was that
that's a good argument.
Was that lesson learned last year at the bottom of the second round where the Arizona Cardinals took Andy Isabella, thinking perhaps that was a better fit for the Cliff Kingsbury system, and they passed on DK Metcalf?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they already learned that lesson the hard way a year ago.
You should go see all the other guys they passed on at the wide receiver position.
This is something to stay on because when Steve Keim was on for Newsmakers Week, I asked him this question, and this was important to me because there's a great argument either way. How successful Steve Keim was early shows he should not be fired, and how strong the failure has been in recent drafts shows he should. And to me, if I'm Michael Bidwell, I don't want to keep you here if we're still trending in the direction of terrible drafts. So my question is, if I'm Michael Bidwell, what are you doing differently that clearly do you accept you have to change something in the front office? I don't know whether it's people or whether it's formula or whether it's how you process this.
Terrible drafts. I mean, look, how about some of the free agent signings?
Yes.
Like, I mean, Tyrann Mathieu just won a Super Bowl this year. I understand the argument. Oh, he was hurt 2 years in a row and he wouldn't take a pay cut. I get all that stuff. But one of the reasons you drafted Tyrann Mathieu was because, or I shouldn't say that, one of the reasons you extended Tyrann mm-hmm. Mathieu was because of the guy he was in the locker room, the teammate he was, the culture he kind of brought. I mean, those things are super important. Then you extend DJ Humphreys on, to me, that's a guy that still has a ton of questions. I understand people, well, he's going to get paid by somebody. Great. Why does it have to be the Arizona Cardinals?
What you did something, Rudy, is a fantastic Wolf impression. You brought up a totally different topic that we all want to argue at the end of the beautiful part of the program, and now we're all stuck. No, it's not your fault. It's a beautiful job because that's how Wolf wins discussions, is he waits until the end to say something, and I'm like, okay, now we're stuck.
And by the way, they did offer Tyron $8 million, and he took $7 million with Houston.
In a place with no state income tax, yeah. But I think that was more because of, you know, some of the underlying issues. Look, here's all. I know we gotta go
took
to
it
a break.
Personal.
Exactly. Here's all I'm saying. We got to go to a break. Look, I like Steve Keim. I like the scouting department. I like Cliff Kingsbury. I like where they're going. All I'm saying is in the NFL, you have a lot of different people in the same building rowing the boat in a different direction for their own personal gain. You have scouting departments who say it's not our job to draft system players. It's our job to draft the best players because we don't know how long that system coach is going to be here. I understand that philosophy. You have coaches who say, I need system players that fit what I do. So there's always that clash. And to me, I just don't think that clash works. I think there needs to be synergy in the building between everybody to get on the same
page.
I totally agree with that. And there has to be a culture and an expectation and a way of scouting. And the way of scouting can't just be height, weight, size, speed, hand size, and watch three games. That's what most fans don't know. Most of these scouts just watch three games of each player. They don't watch his freshman year and his sophomore year and his junior year and his senior year. They watch three games. They pick the three best teams he played. They watch those games. They evaluate him. They go talk to everybody to get a bunch of notes. To me, that's not enough.
Everything you said was fantastic except the hand size. That's vitally important. Coming up next, Astros sign stealing, and Rudy wants to go off on that, and he's going to lose. Coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf. We'll keep you updated on a lot of different things that are happening. Adam Schefter just tweeted out it's official. Joe Burrow is not going to throw at the combine. They don't know if he can hold the football well enough to throw it at the combine, so that's probably why.
Yeah, you know, Joe Burrow's got like 9-inch hands. They're really small. You know, they pretend like he's not going to be able to throw the ball in wet weather because he has small hands. They forget that, you know, playing in the summer in Louisiana in like 100% humidity, you know, it's like playing with a it's like playing with a really dry ball, you know. Like he's not going to be able to throw it if he's got such small hands. These people are so ridiculous.
They should name a band that 9-inch hands. Yeah. And see if that's considered a knockoff or anybody has a.
By the way, Joe had a great tweet. Joe had a great tweet about this yesterday after his hand size. He tweeted that he was thinking about retiring from the NFL because his hands were too small and he wouldn't be able to hold it. the funny thing about Joe Burrow is. If you spend time around anybody who knows Joe, like that's one of the things they talk about a ton is his wiring. And I think when you're talking about successful quarterbacks in the NFL, when you're talking about successful pitchers in baseball, successful people in general, I think that's what they have. They're wired differently.
Well, one of the things that's important, vitally important to be a successful pitcher would be that the guy who's at the plate doesn't know what you're throwing. That's vitally important. And the Astros had an elaborate cheating system in place to be able to figure out what your signs were, not through your intelligence, but through not through player intelligence, but through cheating and algorithms of interns. And I love the hammer job they're receiving now. I love people showing up banging on metal seats to try to act like they know what the pitch is coming. I love the fact that ushers have to steal signs from fans because the Astros stole signs. I love where this story is going, and I hope the Astros continue to get hammered for it. Now, I admit, I do not think they should lose the World Series title. And the reason why is, who do you give it to? Are you swearing all members of the L.A. Dodgers did nothing wrong?
Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman, remember?
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. And so I don't take it from him. Now, earlier this morning, Rudy tried to act like to me, and this is, just so you know, baseball is a religious experience to me. I took Jennifer to Cooperstown on our honeymoon. It was like, hey, you made the dumb decision to marry me. You might as well figure out this is what my life is. And so I took her to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Having said that, you tried to explain to me that the Astros are okay by you. And Rudy Carpenter said, quote, even though in a not-so-beautiful part of the program, I am rooting so hard for the Houston Astros. What?
I can't help it. I mean, look, Here's my thing. One of the things that I love about professional sports, and especially professional baseball, because I think professional baseball and I think professional hockey have a different culture, have a different way of doing things than the NFL does, especially when it comes to holding their teammates or when it comes to policing the game. Baseball does it differently than every other sport. I think hockey does it differently than every other sport. And so to me, I think it's weird that you have a guy like Mike Fryers. And by the way, I'm not trying to bash him or blame mm-hmm. him, but this guy all of a sudden gets a moment of conscience and wants to drop the hammer on this situation. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you might have convinced yourself you have a bunch of integrity now for doing this, but where were you, you know, the entire time this was going on? And then you have the AJ Hinch, who's like, oh, well, I broke a monitor and I knew this was going on, but I didn't really, you know, do anything about it. I guess all I'm saying is that I'm somebody that wishes that we would get rid of almost all of the technology in sports. When you're playing in the NFL, you get off of the sideline or you come off of a third down, mm-hmm. you know, you miss a third down conversion, fourth down, whatever it may be, and you have all of the film right in front of you. A matter of fact, I'll even tell you a story about when I was in high school. We won a state championship my senior year in football. Our defensive coordinator, we knew who we were going to play in the state championship from the passing league. We videotaped every one of their games, and we videotaped every signal. And that was the first – this is a team that had Lorenzo Booker, or before they had guys like Whitney Lewis. This was the first time in over 10 years they didn't score a touchdown in a game. Was that cheating?
I don't know what the rules are in California.
What do you mean the rules? It's the same thing Bill Belichick did. He filmed their signals.
But in the NFL, Spygate, that was illegal. You were not allowed to film other people's signals.
Why?
So, yes, that's cheating.
You can film their defense, but you can't film their signals?
Well, you are arguing whether or not you like the rule. I'm fine arguing whether or not you want to see a rule change. But once a rule's in place, if you're breaking the rule, you're cheating. Like when he was in Cleveland, there are stories that there was one ESPN expose that said he put – now it's funny, but he put Browns personnel – he bought NFL Films T-shirts.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with
that. And put NFL Films T-shirts on and then had them go over and actually film the other team on their own bench.
To me, all I'm saying, it's about tidying up your own ship is all I'm saying. It's about tidying up your own ship. Look, the Houston Astros, they felt like we could put this together. We could get an advantage. We can understand what pitches are coming and give our players a better advantage. To be honest, I'm not a baseball guy. I'm not 100% sure that's even information I would want as a player, because I don't even know if it's 100% true or not.
Every player has a different opinion on whether you want pitch info.
In football, I could walk up to the line of scrimmage, say, hey, Mike's 50, and then tell the Mike linebacker, I'm going to throw a deep dig to the right now. Go stop it. No chance. There's no chance he just goes, yep, that's what he's going to do. I mean, there's no chance.
In baseball, I don't want the sport to be who has the better doctor for steroids. I don't want the sport to be who has a better algorithm, computer formula to figure out the catcher signs. I want, like, Willie Mays, supposedly, and this is, like, he says it's true, and other players say it's true, but, you know, who knows, had a chance to get triples sometimes. Hit the ball so well, this is a clear triple. He stopped at second base, knowing it's a bigger advantage to have him on second reading the catcher signs than it would be to have him on third. So he was that smart of a player. That is not cheating, because now it's your intelligence versus the catcher's intelligence versus the pitcher's ability to decipher complicated signs.
Look,
that's different than having a camera out there.
Okay, I understand why people are upset, but these are a lot of the same people who cry every day about balls and strikes and who want better replay systems and sky judges, and they want to add more technology. If you're a guy that wants to add more technology, don't be upset when these types of things happen. What do you expect?
Why can't I have both? Why can't I have an umpire that uses a system that calls balls and strikes better than he does and not have players using that system to cheat the system?
That makes sense.
Why can't I have? I want a rule for an umpire and a rule for a player, and I want those two things separate.
I guess it just doesn't make any sense.
Yes,
to me. Like,
it does.
Like, hey, here's what we're gonna do, guys. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna create this system so we can get the perfect call.
Yes.
But if you guys use this system, you're cheating.
Yes.
Okay.
I win. Today is Arizona Sports Ticket Window Tuesday, Bear.
Ticket Window Tuesday opens now.
Tempe Beach Park is the site. The Innings Festival. Pretty cool shindig. You want to go? We got two tickets, and I tell you what, since I've always hammered Ricky Rubio, and even though I admitted he had a great first month, he was so fantastic last night. Let's go in honor of Ricky Rubio's seven steals. Caller number seven. Right now, you are a winner of the Innings Festival tickets.
602-260-9870.
If you are not caller number seven, be listening to Bickley and Murata. Both at 12:15 or at 10:15 and 12:15, and also be listening to Burns and Gambo coming up at 4:15 for your next chance to be a winner. Speaking of Ricky Rubio, seven steals, fantastic defense, and an amazing assist to turnover ratio. Is that only because you were playing the Jazz? Where have you been? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Brandon Gardner's going to the Innings Festival. We have our winner from Ticket Window Tuesday. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Rudy Carpenter's in the Octane Community Studios. He's filling in for Wolf today. Suns, a winner last night. And other than the first, first maybe 8 minutes of the game or so, just looked absolutely fantastic. And a lot of good compliments came from Monty Williams, and one of them has been the tendency of this team to really get down and frustrated with bad officiating. And it's something about the NBA that I admit I don't understand from players, and maybe I'm being too logical sitting on my couch with a beer versus actually being emotionally charged into the game. But to me, when you sign up to agree to be an NBA player, there's one thing you should know. The NBA officiating is awful. It's awful. We have an epidemic in our country right now. Bad officiating.
We have a technology problem and a problem of people who think that every call should be 100% correct and we should get rid of all human error. And I don't understand that. That's the same argument I'm making with the Astros, by the way. Or the Asterix, anyway, or whatever you call them.
Astros. So I look at it with this eye of when you agree to go into the NBA, accept bad officiating and quit whining about it. Do your job. And the Suns, what have you earned? I mean, somebody show me the tape of the great championship parade of the Phoenix Suns. Show me all of the great playoff victories in the last 10 years of the Phoenix Suns. When you show me that, then I'll understand more about why the Suns should be so upset about bad officiating. So this has been going on for a little while in the last couple months, and I like what Monty Williams says because I do want to compliment them on the flip side. The officiating last night was horrific. I mean horrific. If you didn't see the game, all you need to know, Utah, 43 free throw attempts. Suns, 24. Now, there's also a basketball argument. Hey, did you go to the hole? Did you show aggression? When you have DeAndre Ayton, who's not aggressive inside, you don't get as many foul calls. There's some truth to that. But not almost 20 free throw attempt difference in that. And Monty Williams, very complimentary afterwards.
I thought our guys were getting a bit down when the fouls weren't going our way in the first half. But we didn't allow it to mess with our energy level. I thought the energy level was consistent from start to finish. And it really helped us to overcome what we thought wasn't a good whistle at the time.
By the way, they just showed the Florida State dunk. I watched that game last night, Florida State Louisville. If you didn't see the Vessel dunk, oh, my goodness. But sorry, I was watching SportsCenter while I was listening to Monty. That's point one, is that's a huge compliment, and they deserve it. Point two is everything Rubio in this game against Utah.
Obviously, Ricky. Coming back here, that's a tough game to play against your former team. So many emotions probably going through his mind and memories and all that. And he dominated the game, and I think he had seven steals. You know, that was big-time defensive effort.
Ricky Rubio in this game was fantastic. It might have been his best game as a Sun, not just scoring 22 points and almost at 50% from the field. An 11-1 assist to turnover ratio and seven steals to go along with it. And he was in every passing lane. He was diving out of bounds. He was amazing. And I say that with this question. Where have you been? why are you able to – like, everybody's going to be a little fired up to play their old team. I get you're a little bit better. I get you're a little bit more focused. And I don't want to act like I'm being inhuman on this, because who wouldn't be? Who – whenever you've had a chance to go up against a company that fired you – how often the rest of us get to compete against companies, I don't know. But when you get to do that, don't you feel that edge that you want to show them what they've screwed up on? I get it. But the gap was so huge between the Ricky Rubio of last night and the Ricky Rubio of the last month. How do you not stare him down and say, Ricky, why isn't this the norm for you?
Yeah, look, it's one of the difficult things about professional athletics. It's very difficult as a professional athlete to play at a consistent level and to play at a highly successful level and be consistent. That's the hardest thing for all professional athletes, is to consistently play well every single day and night out of every single game. It's difficult to do, and there's only a few guys who can do that. There's no question that when you get a guy like Ricky Rubio, or you get a guy like LeBron James playing against an old team or whoever it may be, mm-hmm. there's going to be a little bit more of motivation for them to want to go play well against an organization that either traded them or got rid of them or didn't sign them or give them the contract they wanted, whatever it may be. A lot of professional athletes do have an amazing ability over the course of a long season to be able to turn it on and off. That's something that, you know, a lot of guys do. It's difficult to do. But when you're talking about a guy like Ricky Rubio, for this team, in my view, for this Suns team to win and to win consistently, that's just the kind of play that they need from him and Kelly Oubre and Devin Booker, mm-hmm. and even DeAndre Ayton on an every single night basis. I think there was only one quarter in this game where the Phoenix Suns didn't score over 30 points. And so I guess what I'm saying is to me, this is a good win for the Phoenix Suns, and this should be the expectation for professional basketball players who you pay a lot of money to, who you expect to get your team to the playoffs.
It is something that, for me, I get what you're saying, but I get frustrated when this is now the moment that you can do this. Okay, where have you been? What are you going to do next? You're right about the other guys, but this team has needed a point guard, and I admit I'm bitter. Kobe White was clearly, to me, the draft pick for the Phoenix Suns. Now, to be fair, he was gone when they picked, but the reason why he was gone when they picked is because they traded down and got out of that spot when he would have been there. And then I see him, and you say, oh, hey, we got this point guard. We're fine. We got Ricky Rubio. Well, who's been more consistent? Now, it's arguable because Kobe White's a rookie, and he's had some games which were very rookie-ish, but I just think they would have been so much better with Kobe White. Rudy Carpenter's filling in for Wolf, and you get the proud honor of Character Counts, Rudy, which is every Tuesday at 7:40 when Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical, we always try to take a minute and highlight different student-athletes or different stories around sports. By the way, one thing that was funny, we gave out our $10,000 scholarship last Tuesday. Shane Doan was a guest speaker, and I didn't realize it, that he just gave out a $10,000 scholarship to people or to a young lady who wasn't alive when he came to Phoenix. That's where we've gone now in his age. But today's story is about Lauren Young, who is an exceptional young lady that excels in the classroom, in her sport, as well as the community. She's currently working to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and their mission to cure blood cancers. And she's running for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society 2020 National Student of the Year, along with her teammate Samantha Field and Ella Vitti. Their team is called Coast to Coast Cures. Through groundbreaking research funding by LLS, today the 5-year survival rate for children with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, hopefully I got that right, has gone from 5% to approximately 90%, and their campaign kicked off on January 10th, and it ends coming up this Saturday. Their goal is to raise $200,000 to have a shot at the National Students of the Year title, and their grand finale is set for coming up this Saturday. To help reach her goal, Lauren needs you to go to studentsoftheyear.org, click and donate, and search Lauren Young's name. Her last name is spelled Y-E-U-N-G. Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical is the proud partner of Character Counts, and they award a $10,000 scholarship to a deserving student-athlete in our area, and they just gave it away just this last week. If you want to get your nominee going for next year, just go to CharacterCountsAZ.com. Coming up next, major event coming up at 3 o'clock that determines the future of football. would Rudy Carpenter, former NFL quarterback, vote yay or nay on the new CBA? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up in an hour, Rob Gronkowski is coming up in about an hour. He'll be on at 8:45 this morning. Originally scheduled for 9, he'll be on at 8:45. He's promoting a stadium event at Sun Devil Stadium in which his company puts on a Rob Gronkowski-like obstacle course. But it's kind of an interesting course. You choose what obstacles you're going to do as you run the course. So you choose how hard the event will be for you.
Do you have to eat or use his CBD products before you do this obstacle course?
No, but what's highly entertaining about the rundown of what he'll be talking about. And of course, we're talking football with him too, and Tom Brady and everything else. But the thing that made me laugh is when I looked through it, they have the whole rundown of the agenda. This group will start here, this group will start here, blah, blah, blah. And then, just as important as all the rules and the starting time and everything else, it says 9 p.m., after party to be announced. That's equal to everything else on the obstacle course. So I do have to laugh when it says to be announced. What place in Tempe can actually handle a Rob Gronkowski party?
He'll be in Old Town.
You won't even mess with Tempe.
He'll be in Old Town.
Okay. We'll see. It says TBA. So we'll see if he calls that in. We have to know where are there pools and people that can be slammed into pools is going to be important. Rudy Carpenter was in the NFL, and we have something in front of us right now of the actual CBA. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, you're going to have a meeting with the Executive Council of the NFL Players Association and the committee in charge of the CBA with the NFL. And I'm looking at this situation, and I almost find it funny. There are so many players that are against this deal. So many players that say we have more leverage than we've ever had when it comes to the 17th game, and you haven't gotten enough concessions out of the NFL owners, and therefore don't agree to this deal. I think that's a terrible mistake by the players, and it's for a negative reason. The reason is I believe the deal will get worse for you if you don't agree to this deal. And everybody knows you don't have the actual ability or enough guys in the union that will stand firm during a lockout or actually get together and strike.
First off, most players don't even know how much they pay in union fees per year. Okay, that's the problem in the NFL. The problem that I have in the NFL is when I hear veteran players, some guys who I like.
Yeah.
Some guys who I like, personally friends, that made a bunch of money in the NFL trying to tell guys like me who didn't make $40, $50 million in the NFL what I should get in my pension and what I should get in my retirement and what I should get in my medical plan. And what these are guys who don't need the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that they want more and guys like me get less. The fact of the matter is this. It's like this in all business. This is what I was trying to say about the U.S. Women's National Team. The NFL is a collective of 32 people or 32 organizations. These owners own these teams. They have the right to do, in my opinion, what they choose with their organizations and with their teams. These owners have a ton of responsibility, a ton mm-hmm. of accountability, a ton of, there is a lot on the owner's plates as far as, you know, in their mind, they believe that they are investing back into the league. They think that players are getting compensated and paid fairly. All I'm getting at is I don't think that on both sides of this, when you hear players come out for this or come out against this, I don't understand how these guys form their opinions, because I would bet a large amount of money that none of them, or the vast majority of them, have not read every single page of that collective bargaining agreement. My big issue with the NFL is, if you want to talk guaranteed money, I get it. A lot of players want to talk marijuana and drug testing. I get it. What I want to talk about is healthcare, and nobody seems to be talking about that. NFL players, if you're a vested veteran, you get 5 years of health insurance when you're done playing. And then you heard Jay Feely talking about it the other day about mm-hmm. an HRA reimbursement plan.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of our benefits in the NFL, I shouldn't say that, all of our benefits in the NFL are geared towards how many years you played. So if you played a lot of years in the NFL, you made a lot of money. And then you get a ton of money in all of your benefits. If you played 4 years in the NFL, 5 years in the NFL, 6 years in the NFL, by the standards now, you're a vested veteran. But because you didn't play as long as the other guys, you get way less in your pension, way less in your 401k, way less in your HRA medical plan. I mean, I can go on and on and on. So it's the same thing everywhere else. It's the top 1% of the players on each team who are negotiating for every other player.
I can tell you about this. And by the way, you mentioned Jay Feely, who had a great conversation yesterday with Bickley and Murata. And he kind of said a little bit of the same thing I did, in which this deal isn't good enough, but the players aren't going to do enough to be able to afford to sit out a season anyway.
Let me say something on that, because that's the biggest point here. The one thing that the NFL owners know that I think that what gives them all their leverage is they understand that so many of these players do not understand their finances. They do not understand how to save money. They do not get it. And so many of these players literally cannot afford to miss game checks. Mm-hmm. NFL owners know that. And so they have a lot of leverage. If NFL players would go to the NFLPA meetings, if NFL players would go to the benefits meetings and not just go home after practice, if the NFL players would really understand.
And this is stuff you saw personally.
Look, yeah. When I was in the NFL, we negotiated a CBA, a new one. You know what that meant? That meant a guy like me had to play in an uncapped year, which meant I got no matches on any of my benefits. I had to play a year in the NFL for free on just my salary and not get any match.
Wow.
I don't know any veteran players who are fighting for me. They're all fighting for themselves. The top guys who are in the room
getting
paid. I can
tell you, we had Lorenzo Alexander on earlier this week, and I was really impressed with something that he said, because he's on the executive council. And he agreed that this deal isn't the best thing for people like him that have been in the league as long as he has. But he was imploring people to vote for this deal, because he said this is a better deal for guys that make it 2, 3, 4 years than previous deals. He didn't say it's the greatest thing in the world, but he just said it's a better deal for the guy that doesn't stay in the league as long versus guys like me. And he thought that was more important. So he's looking at it in a selfless way of saying, if it's in my interest, I vote no. But I think it's better for our average player.
I like Lorenzo Alexander. I'd be interested to know how he voted the last time when it wasn't in his interest.
Okay.
When they voted for the last CBA, which in my opinion was an awful CBA agreement.
Well, that's where, and I don't know, all the players cared more, and this is where it was stupid.
It's easy to say for Lorenzo now when he's out of the league.
The players cared more about having less practice time and less pads.
Yeah, and that just helped the veteran players more than anything.
And what's funny about that to me is, who does that hurt? That hurts fans and coaches. Because the coaches can't coach you as well, and the fans see a lesser product, but do owners really care? You want to wear pads less? Okay. So the players think they're getting this great opportunity, this greatest thing, and yet you really want to help, like you were saying, veterans minimum, things like that, or even rookie minimums.
Look, rookie minimums, guaranteed money. And then for me, I just think that there is an epidemic in the National Football League, but there's an epidemic in all of professional sports with the number of athletes who go broke within 3 to 5 years after they're done
playing.
But
do you agree with me that's not the owner's fault or the owner's problem? Or do you think the owners should be doing something about it? Now, I could argue the Players Association should do something about it.
Look,
if I'm an owner, I don't care.
I'm a personal responsibility guy.
Yeah.
There's no question. But we're talking about a lot of young guys who come from environments that they don't understand this.
Uh-huh.
And we're asking guys at a very young age to be professional football players, to be professional PR guys, to be professional businessmen, to be professional tax guys. We're asking very young guys. Just ask yourself, if you were 21 years old or 22 years old, making $10,000, $15,000, $25,000, even $500,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
how would you handle that? And a lot of people say, easy. It would be easy for me. I just don't think that. These are young people who I
and
think
I agree with you, but I don't fault the owners for it. I look at the Players Association and say, you're not doing enough.
Well, I can talk about the Players Association for a long time too, and DeMaurice Smith and what a joke that is. But again, whose fault is that?
the players.
I mean, and until the players understand, until they truly decide that we want to sit down and we want to understand what this deal is and why and how the NFL works and how the TV deals work and how the insurance works and how the pensions work and the 401ks work, until players really understand that, they're never going to get a good deal.
Coming up next, Rush Hour Reboot, when Maloney takes you through every story that you need to know. Again, make sure you're listening to Burns and Gambo today. That meeting starts at 3 o'clock. It should be over before the Burns and Gambo show ends, and we'll have a better idea whether or not there'll be football after the 2020 season. Rush Hour Reboot is next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.